All right, so with that, let's go and get started. My name is Tony Sanchez. I'm with Citrix Systems. I work on our Worldwide Alliances team. And in this session, we're going to go ahead and cover some scalability information related to Zen Desktop 7, specifically focusing on Hyper-V 2012. I have my contact information over there on the bottom of the PowerPoint presentation. If you do Twitter, if you do Facebook, if you do anything social media-like, feel free to take down my information. The reason also why I'm saying that is in about 1 to 2 weeks, I have 120-page plus document, which is step by step by step of Zen Desktop 7 on Hyper-V with screenshots. So if you're interested in looking at that, please take my Twitter handle down. It'll be posted on Citrix.com, but also just in case you want to get a little bit of an early release, you can go ahead and send me an email. I'll go ahead and send that over to you as well so you can take a look at it. So in our session agenda, we're going to go ahead and cover a lot of stuff related to Zen Desktop 7. In case you didn't know, Zen Desktop 7 just came out yesterday. So if you're a Citrix customer and you haven't downloaded it, please go ahead and do so. The newest release is out. It includes a bunch of information, a bunch of data in terms of what's new. Some of the stuff we're going to cover specifically focusing on scalability. So if you're new to Zen Desktop or new to Zen App in general, this may be a little advanced for you since this is a 300-level session. So we're going to go pretty deep. But I'll do my best to cover some high-level information for those of you that are kind of new to VDI or even new to Zen Desktop in general. We're going to go over a lot of demos, so provided that the demo gods are with me today, we'll go ahead and go through those. We'll also cover some single-server scalability results, specifically focusing on HP blades and Fusion I/O cards. So if that's an architecture you're interested, you want to know how did it scale in our latest release, I'll be able to share some of that data with you. We'll also go through some designs that will go ahead and focus on version 7, different ways we can do a lot of desktop creation. And then at the very end, I have a really cool giveaway, so I encourage you to stay. Unfortunately, I went to buy a solid-state drive, and I happened to pick a day in the States where it was called inventory. And in inventory, when you go to like a Best Buy or a CompUSA, which is what we call them, you usually get to pick stuff that's off the shelf. But everything was not on the shelf because they were doing inventory. So instead of getting a solid-state drive, I got a really, really nice, super expensive pair of wireless headphones that are noise-canceling. So just as good as a solid-state drive, but if you're flying home and you got some noisy kids in the back of you, they'll definitely help out. So stick around if you want to win those. It's real simple. So just to give you a little bit of overview, this gentleman's pretty important. If you're a Citrix person, you've been following our technology for a long time. This was a co-founder of Citrix in 1989, Ed Akabuchi. And unfortunately, last Friday, he passed away. So it's a big blow for the technical community because it's one of the founders of Citrix. So he really helped set the pace for what a lot of technology you see today in terms of remoting, in terms of getting into applications and desktops. So his vision is really what led me to Citrix 7 years ago. And prior to being at Citrix, I was a Zen App administrator like many of you. So I'm not just someone that is a marketing person or has never installed our product. I run a very large 100,000 user environment. So I came from a big environment. I have plenty of experience. Although it may be up to Zen App 4 or Presentation 4, I'm a little rusty in terms of the newer stuff. But nonetheless, I've been in those seats before. So I have 3 marketing slides. That's it. I promise you, you won't see any more than that. And then after that, we're going to go right into the bits. We're going to go into a lot of the data stuff. But there are people in here that are curious and still new to Zen Desktop in general. And they ask questions about, you know, why should I want to do it on Hyper-V? And what makes the Citrix and Microsoft relationship so special and so interesting as to why I want to run my business on that joint stack? So for those of you that are new, it's pretty easy to read some of these bullet points, and I won't go through all of them. But obviously, Microsoft being the desktop leader in desktops and operating systems, as well as System Center, and Citrix being the leader in VDI, it kind of makes sense that you use the two architectures together. Obviously, you can do other hypervisors, and we support all 3 of them, which is great, but in terms of the best scale and the best management, there really is no other platform than leveraging System Center for VDI. It has the most amount of tools, the most amount of interaction with Zen Desktop at this point. So the scalability has been proven. The information is there, whether it's from HP, whether it's from Dell, whether it's from Cisco. We have a variety of reference architectures that show how you can build this in a scalable architecture. In terms of innovation, again, going back to just giving you a little bit of history, because again, some people are new, we've been doing this for a really, really, really long time. So again, we started out in 1989. That was when we were founded. And that's when Endo Akabuchi had this brilliant idea of figuring out, you know, how to do things in OS2 that really had changed the world back then. They were so forward-looking that people just like, why would you want to leave IBM to go do something like that? And it was his vision and then the vision of others that led to where Citrix is now. So over the years, a lot has changed in terms of products. We've grown. We're not just this one-trick pony, because I remember there are some people I met that said, hey, you know, I'm still running Metaframe XP because that's all I think you guys do. You just do one product. And it's like, whoa, 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 you're living under a rock. We've changed a lot because technology in the world has changed. So over the years, you can see a lot of the products that have launched, whether it's WinFrame to Metaframe to Presentation Server. And throughout all these years of Citrix building on that Microsoft platform, we've won awards. Some of the first awards, specifically like ISV of the Year, which really helps Microsoft for their architecture, as well as helping them with other areas such as Hyper-V and System Center. But so if we keep going through this slide, you'll see we're kind of go up to the point where we are now in 2013. All the way up until last October at Synergy Barcelona, we announced the release of Project Excalibur, which was a big thing for us. And Project Excalibur is now known today as Zen Desktop 7. But with all that information and all that knowledge, our goal for Zen Desktop 7 really was to have one console, one way for us to figure out how to get desktops and apps into one common user interface. If you're a ZenApp administrator in the audience, go ahead, or I'd say online, but I can't really see them, so go ahead and raise your hand for me if you're currently doing ZenApp. What about Zen Desktop people? All right, so it's pretty obvious, right? You've wanted something that makes it easier. A console allows you to do two different architectures in one, and that's really what we're getting to with version 7. For us, it's all about, again, simplifying not only just securing, but making any of those devices, whether mobile or, in front of me, a full-fledged desktop, available and usable in the new version of Zen Desktop 7. So what really has changed in terms of what we have? So if we build out the rest of the slide deck, I won't do a lot of animation one at a time. I'll just make it simple so everybody can read it. It's changed dramatically. So let's talk about first FlexCast integration. Those of you that are familiar with ZenApp are familiar with IMA, or Independent Management Architecture. That's always been the de facto standard for us for ZenApp. In Zen Desktop 5.6, that changed a lot. We adopted something called FMA, which is FlexCast Management Architecture. And what that does in version 7 is really allows us to do a couple different things, more specifically focusing around building a common platform. Server operating systems, client operating systems, all delivered under one single console. And that's what's impressive, because never in the history of any Citrix product have we had such a tight integration where we took those completely separate architectures and merged them into one. So as we go further down this, again, there's a lot of stuff that's changed in version 7, so I can't go into every one of them, but to show you there's some interesting stuff, I'll get to that later on in the demo. For platforms, this is probably the most important thing that people ask a lot of questions about. So what do you support then versus now? So in version 7, Windows 8, definitely. Windows Server 2012, Hyper-V 3, Service Pack 1, System Center, whether that's Configuration Manager, whether that's VMM, whether that's OpsMan, doesn't matter. SQL 2012, and if you're doing SQL database mirroring in SQL 2012, we support that as well for Zen Desktop as well as for Provisioning Server, which we'll get into later on. A lot of this stuff, again, it's all available online. You can read in our eDoc site. So if you want the exact bits and bytes, I have that link available at the end of the PowerPoint. And I also have something called an iChart. It's really, really super tiny, but it'll really be helpful if you want to see all the bits and bytes and people want to know, you know, what's new and what makes Zen Desktop 7 so special. So if we look at our architecture overview, this is kind of where we're at. Things are still the same in terms of requiring an agent. And that agent is what we put inside that common instance of the operating system, whether that's Windows 7, whether that's Windows 2012, really doesn't matter to us. We still need an agent to go inside the OS in order for us to remote into it using HDX technology. Going down the line, you still have the broker. That's still required. And we'll get further into that as we go into the PowerPoint. But that broker is that central person, that central communication to both apps and desktops through Zen Desktop 7. But what's interesting about this is that now in version 7, we have support for whether it's used to just be Windows 7, but now we can do Server 2012, we can do app delivery, and we can do remote PC. So remote PC is a really, really great way if you're just looking to kick the tires with Zen Desktop 7, but yet you really don't want to go down the whole virtual route. You want to take your agent and you want to put it on a physical machine that sits in your cube. Makes total sense, because why have to go through the process of just testing things and building a virtualized environment if you can just put the agent on a physical machine? Makes total sense. So that's really what remote PC does. Makes it simpler for you to adopt a VDI-based idea, but yet go physical. Some of the stuff we're going to focus here is really going to be at the bottom on PBS, or provisioning server. In Zen Desktop 7, there's still ways of doing delivery for desktops. There's MCS, which is machine creation services. And that's perfect for one common use case, and that's virtual desktops on a hypervisor. If that's all you ever plan on doing, and you want a simple way to set that up, MCS makes a lot of sense. However, there are people that want to go really, really big in scale and also want to tackle physical machines. That's where provisioning server comes in, because it's not just for virtual instances. You can use it on physical devices. You can use it without VDI. You can use it for SQL servers, web servers, IIS servers. The list goes on and on and on. So we have two different platforms because there's multiple needs. Most of this content I'm going to show you here is all focused around PVS and what's new and what's coming. In terms of architecture, this is what makes Zen Desktop 7 so special. Of course, we still have receiver at the very front of everything, and that's still the entry point for the user to leverage to get into the architecture. But Storefront is a new portal that allows users to come in and self-service apps. In terms of management, if you look underneath the Storefront icon there, there's Director and Studio. Before, they were called Desktop Director in version 5.6 of Zen Desktop, and Studio Console as well. Director is what we use for monitoring and managing things, but Studio is really we're going to focus a lot of this presentation on in terms of building stuff. The great thing about version 7 is if you look in terms of the controller, we have one SQL database. In ZenApp 6.5 and Zen Desktop 5.6, regardless of how you built it, you had to go to two individual SQL databases. It could have been the same SQL instance, that's totally fine, but two separate databases. Whereas in version 7, it's one database where we write apps or we write desktop information too. So that really makes it simpler for you to deploy. The VDA used to be called Virtual Desktop Agent. Now you might hear it as Virtual Delivery Agent, because it's not just desktops. It's apps or desktops that we can do in version 7. So that goes on both server operating systems as well as desktop operating systems. So let's get into the meat of this and what's new in Provisioning Services 7. First off, we support the latest Microsoft platforms. As I mentioned earlier, Server 2012 is supported, whether you're using it as Server 2012 to install provisioning services on, or whether you're using it as your master image that you're going to capture. Windows 8 is also supported, again, for capturing your base master image, and System Center, VMM, Virtual Machine Manager, Service Pack 1, and Configuration Manager. All of those are 100% supported on Zen Desktop 7, as well as with Provisioning Services 7. Some of the new features that are part of RTM of Zen Desktop 7 is something that I hold near and dear to my heart, that if you're familiar with Zen Desktop on Hyper-V, this has always been a painful thing to deal with. And we found a way to resolve it. And what that is when we boot up the machines that we provision with PBS, by default, we always have to boot Pixie in order to leverage the Pixie protocol to boot all the VMs up. What's nice, though, in PBS 7, by default, when you use the Zen Desktop Wizard to build your VMs, regardless whether they're Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 2012, the first 20 meg of data gets loaded into the legacy adapter. However, we automatically switch from legacy to synthetic. So we get full 1 gig capability, full benefits of that enlightened adapter automatically out the gate. So that's important because that makes a lot less work on the logical processors of Hyper-V, so that when we scale servers, we actually get a better increase because less processing has to happen on the legacy NIC, because we can leverage more of what's in the enlightened NIC. So this is huge because it actually does increase scalability. I've done some tests to show you, and we'll talk about that later. BDM is an awesome new tool that's available in the Provisioning Services Wizard. And this is important because what BDM does, if you're familiar with building Zen Desktop images with Hyper-V, when you build your master image, you always have to create your template in VMM with a write cache. to store the non-volatile data. What is cool about this is that your VMM templates now don't need a disk attached to them. They're completely empty. A shell reference pointer that when we go through the PBS wizard, we look at that template, and the wizard will enumerate that template and see, hey, this is a template we can use to build Windows 7 desktops. But now, with BDM, we actually can create what's called a boot device hard drive. So when we go through this wizard, and I'll show you this in a demonstration later, we actually will create a separate VHDX file that gets mounted to each VM that they'll boot from. So it's kind of like MCS in a sense, because you have this boot drive that's booted from. But this actually makes it really cool, because now you actually can boot things faster without having to use Pixie. So this is a new feature that's part of PBS 7. You'll also see, as we go through a couple screenshots here in the next section, this is what it looks like. Once the machine's created under your IDE controller 0, specifically in Hyper-V, you'll see that BDM VHD file, and of course your normal VHDX file for the write cache. Multi-NIC support, so if you're looking to get the most out of bandwidth and teaming, we do support multiple NICs and the provisioning server streaming service. This is probably the coolest feature I like. I was kind of getting to this earlier, but I was one step ahead of myself. The automatic creation of write cache disks. So back to what I was talking about earlier. When you create your template, normally you'd have to have that disk assigned to that template when you provision through the wizard. Now the wizard will add the disk for you automatically. I'll show you a demo of that, how that goes. What you do is you select local write cache at the very bottom where it has a size of 6. I think the default is 10. And when you go through the wizard process, the VMs will boot up and automatically add that VHD file, that or that VHDX file for the write cache every single time at the provisioning instance. So that means logically, if you think about it, when you build 1,000 desktops or 2,000, historically when that VMM template had the write cache file associated to it, you have to copy that over and over and over times 1,000 machines. Now you only have to do it once. Because what happens is that when you go through the wizard, it goes through this process of talking straight to Hyper-V and automatically adds the VHDs directly from the Hyper-V host, instead of going to VMM and saying, hey, give me this disk for the write cache times 1,000 over and over and over. So there's a huge savings here in terms of time. Write cache percent use counter. This is also something that's really, really cool, because when you're building your virtual disks, you're always curious in terms of how much write cache am I using for my temporary data. There's a new counter that is actually shown in there that tells you what the percentage of write cache actually used is. So when you're trying to design your local storage where you're going to store your temporary data, you can actually use this to help figure out how much storage you really, truly need as you go through your scale testing to figure out, well, I made a 6 gig write cache. Oh, it's overkill. I only really needed 3. So now you can actually effectively decide what's the right amount of storage you're going to use. SMB3 support. If you're in the previous session with Jose, he talked about SMB3. That's supported with PBS as well. And if you're using machine creation services, that's also supported. So in SMB3, we could store our write cache there as well. So it all depends which design you're going to use, whether it's SMB or MCS or PBS. But either way, we support that. So let's see if I can go ahead and go straight into a demo. All right, can everyone see my screen okay? Great. I apologize for my messy desktop here. It is slightly messy, but let's see if I can get to everything. Okay. Perfect. To make it what? Smaller? Bigger. No, we can't adjust the resolution. That's what you had told me, unfortunately. So we'll try to see if we can use zoom it to make things bigger here. All right. So this is slightly small, but bear with me. Let me try and go one step further here. And what I'll do, since I just rebuilt this VM just a few minutes ago before the presentation, I will remote into it, see if we can make it a little bit better for you guys. All right, one more second. Let's just add that in there. Okay. Better or worse? Slightly better? Slightly better? Okay. Yeah, I wish we could have adjusted the resolution a little bit more, but we'll try our best here. Okay. All right, so let's go through and show you what that process looks like. So this is RTM code. So what you're looking at now versus a few weeks ago when I did the session in North America is the final version of Zen Desktop 7. So everything you see here should be identical in terms of what you see when you download it from the web. So I already have a couple collections already provisioned, and I have some images already. So let's go through the wizard process to show you what this looks like. I'll go ahead and point to my Zen Desktop controller, which is labeled right there. First off, I'm doing this all on my laptop here, so I don't have a high-speed server, so it may take a little bit of time to provision, but I'll do the best I can to make this fast. We're going to go ahead and use our local C drive to provision these VMs. So those of you that are familiar with Zen Desktop, this looks pretty familiar. Now, right now, I'm going to go and talk to VMM and load the templates that I see that I'm going to mass create the VMs from. These templates here, by default, that say BDM PBS do not have the write cache file attached to them. So in this demonstration, I'm going to show you what it looks like to provision them using BDM with no write cache at all. So I'll select Windows 7, and click Next, and I'm going to use an existing catalog. Actually, we'll create a new one. Let's do that even better. And we'll select Windows Desktop as an OS, and we'll select Fresh New Desktop each time because it's a pool desktop. Here you can see that write cache file that shows what we can create, whether it's 6 gig. If I want to do BDM, I select the bottom button here, and I'm just going to create one particular desktop at this time. If I had dynamic memory assigned to my template, in this case I don't, I just have 2 gig, it would show up as dynamic memory, and I could adjust the settings, whether it's starting at 512, 1024, any of those settings, I could go through it right there. We'll create a couple accounts, and we'll just drop those in the OU right here. So we'll call them win7-pvs. And we click Finish. So at this point, the jobs are being sent from PBS to VMM. He's intercepting the jobs, going through the process of building all the desktops over to the Hyper-V host. If we move over from here to VMM, and we look at the jobs menu, we'll see those jobs coming across the wire right here. Oops, looks like we lost remoting. Let me do that again. All right, 1 second while we recover, because that's not so happy. Let's just go right from here. And we'll log in straight to the console. All right, there we go. Well, I seem to have lost mouse connectivity, but let's just go to the host and show you what that looks like. So the jobs are being sent from that VMM server to here. And if we scroll to the bottom, we can see that that one's already booting up. Let's look straight at the properties of that VM. And you can see both the network adapters are assigned. And you can see the BDM is selected as a boot device, as well as the write cache that got automatically added. So when you do this over and over, there's some stats I'll show you later on. But it's important to do this in not super large quantities, because there are some instances where when you do this times 100, it can get a little taxing, because when these machines boot up, what has to happen is that by default, it's not going to have a disk associated with it. The machines turn up, we add that particular write cache in that BDM file on the fly, and then they shut down. So that's how the new BDM or the new auto write cache creation process works. So keep that in mind. If you do it times 10, 50, 100, it's not so bad. But if you're trying to do it in big, big bulk, it's going to be pretty taxing on your host. So do keep that in mind. It does have some increments, so it doesn't do them all at once. It has some throttling, but there are some things to keep in mind when you do that. And then we're logged in. So that's what that process looks like if you're going to use the AutoWrite cache or BDM. Effectively, you just choose one or the other, and you'll have those VHDs or VHDX files automatically built for you on the fly. So it really makes it simple. Okay, so let's go back to the PowerPoint. So let's look at some provisioning stats. This is some data here that I have from our internal team. The data from here is not Zen Desktop RTM. So it is highly possible that in the last month or so, maybe 2 months, the data's gotten better. But I thought this is important because as you go through this process and you want to know what's it take for me to boot these up in terms of Pixie or if I'm doing BDM, how long does it take for me to create 100, 200, 500, or 1,000? This is data that we did internally in our lab. So like I mentioned, the create process is not so bad if you're using PBS. For BDM, it takes a little bit more time because remember, we have to add these disks on the fly and the VMs have to shut down. So the creation takes a little bit longer, even though it's easier. So there's this trade-off. So as you're designing your architecture, make sure you figure out, well, do I want easy or do I want to do what I know that works, but it may just be not as easy because there's couple more steps involved. In terms of registering, whether we're doing PBS or BDM, it's definitely a difference there. You can see once we're at 1,000, the Pixie machines register. The only reason why we didn't have BDM is just because we weren't able to boot that many at that particular time. But in terms of 100 to 500, it's not that big of a difference in terms of minutes for them to power on. Registration, not so much of a difference either. In terms of 100 to 250, 5 plus seconds or so between 100 and 250. Power off and delete, there's where a difference comes in play, whether it's Pixie or whether it's BDM. So with Pixie, again, you can just right-click on those particular VMs in the console and just kill them. So the power off process usually is pretty fast. BDM takes a little bit longer if you're going to go down that route. If you're going to create VMs and store on a cluster shared volume, what does that process look like, whether it's 100 or 1,000? Same concept applies here in terms of seconds to create 100 versus Pixie or BDM. It's about 12 seconds difference, give or take. So if you're using CSV or CSV recache, that also makes a big, big difference if you're using things with PBS or machine creation services. So if you haven't learned about CSV recache with Server 2012, that's definitely something you should take a look at. Power on process here from 100 to 500, not too much of a major difference. And registration, pretty much on par. So probably the biggest real difference is creation. If you're going to use BDM, just be aware of the creation time as well as the shutdown time. There's a difference between the two of them. And then power off and delete. So let's go over to some of the stuff that I did. I spent about a month working on with HP, and that's the single server scalability stuff. This was data from about a month and a half ago. So it is still kind of new, but I still have to redo these tests on our RTM code. So let's go through what I had set up. We did have a full C7000 chassis loaded with Gen 8 blades, but for a single server test in the time I had, I could only get by with doing one blade this particular time. So we used Windows Server 2012 data center for the host with the IPv role enabled. The blade was fully loaded with 256 gig of RAM, and the procs were E2680. So not quite exactly the latest and greatest, but not either old at that point. We had a single RAID 1 of 290 gig for the host and for everything. And we had a 1 terabyte Fusion I.O. card that we used for storage of all the write cache files. So a lot of people say, well, that I can do it with cheaper solid state disks. And that's totally fine. You can do that route too. But the amount of IOPS you gain from a Fusion I.O. card outweigh any of the other lesser inexpensive solid state drives. So in terms of write performance, it's absolutely insanely fast. So if you have a high IOP workload, this is something you should think about in terms of your design. So what we use is Login VSI as a workload generator. It's pretty much a de facto standard if you're looking at doing scale testing. And Login VSI is here as well. They have a booth at TechEd. So if you're interested in learning more, definitely go see them. But we focused it on basically the light workload in terms of generating IOPS because it is the most IOP intense as you go through the log testing. We could have done medium and heavy workloads, but we didn't have enough time to get to them. The generator is pretty simple. It goes through the process of starting Internet Explorer. It launches some basic applications like Microsoft Word 2010. And throughout this whole test, we did Office 2010. We do have some other data on Office 2013. And if you really are interested in learning what's the difference between Office 2010 and 2013, just in terms of scalability, go to blogs.citrix.com and look up a gentleman named Frank Anderson. He's a colleague of mine who has a great article that tells you what the impact in terms of density is. So it's really good to get that data before you go down the route so you can plan ahead for your architecture. Our VM configuration is pretty simple. Windows 7x64 is what we used. I went a little bit differently this route, and I did 3 NICs because I've had a lot of people ask me, well, I know you can do 2, but I have a super secret classified network, and I need 3 network cards. So I said, fine, let's try 3 NICs, and let's see what the scalability looks like. In all these VMs, we had dynamic memory applied. So our starting point was 768 with a max of 1536. And pretty much throughout the scalability test for Windows 7 specifically, the workload in terms of memory never really peaks above 1500 meg. It just doesn't. So that's a pretty safe number, again, for this particular set of tests. The write cache files we used were 4 gig, and they are pre-expanded. I did not use BDM in this. I actually used the normal old school wizard, which was going through the process of having that write cache file attached to your VMM template. So I went through that process because, A, I knew it was going to put more of a penalty push when I create all these 200-plus VMs on the Fusion I.O. card, because it's going to do harder writes in terms of writing that 4 gig file over from VMM to the hosts and storing it on that Fusion I.O. card. The bin file is something we disabled. This is something that's, I have some advanced tips on it later in the slide that I'll show you, but this is a big feature you need to look at if you're using Windows Server 2012. In terms of create, boot, and register, this is some really interesting data from the results I had. It took 53 minutes for me to create 225 Windows 7 desktops using a Zen desktop wizard. Not too bad. It's pretty fast. The power on actions, I really kind of went a little bit above the norm, and I tried to push it at 30. What that means is that as I provision 200-plus desktops, the Zen desktop controller has a setting that says how many VMs it should power on per minute. And that's an interesting setting because if you mess with it too much, you could get a negative result. So I changed it from the default, which was 10, and I upped it to 30 because I really was wanting to produce a good bootstorm. I mean, I got a little antsy also, so I want to see how much I could break it. At that point in time, I pretty much pegged the processor as these VMs were booting up. And this is what it looked like. So is it a recommended design to do 30 VM power on actions on Hyper-V 2012? No. Don't do it. You'll break something and you won't be a happy camper. You can adjust the throttling, which we'll get to later on, and still get a fast boot time after you've created your desktop. So changing it for 30 actions per minute is probably not recommended. But what's it look like if I drop it down a little bit? Same test, 53 minutes to create 225 desktops, 15 actions per minute. If you notice something here, when I built these at 15 actions per minute, it took me 20 minutes to boot and 23 minutes to register, even though I did it at a slower time. And if I go back a slide, it took me 29 minutes to register. So it's longer to register because I was more aggressive when I booted all these desktops on. The performance was really acceptable. Now, again, it's not the default because it's 15. The default is 10. And 10 is usually the sweet spot. That's what the installation of Zen Desktop is set at. But if you're curious what that looks like, this is what the proc looked like in terms of actions per minute and the percent average. So it's 90%. And that's really pushing it as much as you should in terms of a bootstorm and things booting up. So if you really want to go 15 actions per minute, you could. But 10's pretty safe. It's pretty conservative. So with 240 VMs powered on, this was what I was aiming for. What was the max density I could get in terms of VSI scalability? 233 was what I achieved because, again, give or take, when you do a scale test, you're not always going to get apples for apples. Not all 240 VMs will power on or may go through the test successfully because it's a scale test. Things are going to potentially have a hiccup here or there. So our max was 233 in terms of what VSI considered an acceptable server performance as well as what we consider an acceptable user experience. So, does that mean that you should go and try to put 233 desktops on your production? No, you shouldn't. It's just a generator for you to get an idea of how you're going to perform. But there are people that say, hey, you know, I've gotten pretty close to what you're saying. I've changed my workloads a little bit here and there. If you include antivirus, again, that dramatically changes things down because this workload does not have AV. If you are interested in antivirus stats and performance, I have a blog on that too for McAfee on ZenApp in terms of what that scales at. So that is something to keep in mind. All these tests are done without. You go to more realistic numbers, it's going to be obviously a lot less. So those are things to keep in mind. From a scale test perspective, in terms of how did the hardware handle and how did the user experience handle, it considered that to be a pretty acceptable user experience. During that peak time of that whole test, the logical CPU on the Hyper-V host was at 94%. So that's at max, though. That's with all 233 users executing that script over and over, running through that Zen desktop session and test. The average RAM I had available was 6 gig. So I consumed as much RAM as I could out of 256. So that gives you a little bit of an idea. If you're looking to fully load a Gen 8 Blade, how much RAM could I put in there versus how much am I really going to utilize if I try to go for max density and scale up versus scaling out? What did the Fusion I/O card look like? So this is what I read online, and I also want to confirm this with Fusion I/O because I don't know if there is a specific difference between the HP branded or HP leveraged Fusion I/O card versus one that you could just buy from Fusion I/O. That card, from what I read online, this is the number online, was 250,000 was a max amount of IOPS one single card could achieve. And there are benefits for doing something like that because you can put it in one Gen 8 blade and your power savings are tremendous instead of having to store that somewhere else. Now, there's also drawbacks as well, costs, things you have to negotiate with your vendor. But in terms of average IOPS and so forth, it was not bad. It was about 2,000 IOPS for that entire user test. So that's what one single test looked like. Now, again, we didn't go through multiple tests. I didn't do ZenApp, which is obviously going to generate, you know, potentially even more IOPS. So there's still a variety of more tests I need to do. But just so you have some idea conceptually of how things scale and how things work, these are things for you to keep in consideration. Here's some tips and tricks. A lot of good stuff that I've done that I want to share with you that people ask, well, how'd you do that? And what's some of the best practices I can use for Zen Desktop 7 and Provisioning Services 7? So calculating the write cache with Hyper-V, this is specific only for Hyper-V, and it's more so for 2000 R2, but also applicable for 2012. When you're looking at storing your write cache, whether it's ZenApp or Zen Desktop on Hyper-V, there's this little thing called a bin file, which is a save memory state of an operating system. And that bin file is always equivalent to the amount of RAM a VM has. And oftentimes people overlook that when they use Hyper-V because they don't really take in consideration local storage, where they're going to store stuff, or even at a SAN for that matter. If you're looking at using a write cache plus Hyper-V as a host for running all your VMs, you have to take the PVS write cache plus the bin file and multiply that times the amount of VMs. So you have a 10 gig write cache plus a 10 gig bin file times 10, means you need 200 gig of storage. So if you kind of go through that, that's something you have to think about also. The great thing about 2012, though, is you can modify that. If you go to the VM state, you can change from what's called the save virtual machine state to shut down the guest operating system. Simply by changing from one of these settings, you automatically eliminate the size increase of the bin file, which means you cut your storage requirement in half for storing temporary data. So if you go through this, you can see just by simply omitting that, I actually cut the storage in half in terms of how much I really, truly need for storing my write cache files, just by making one little change. These were the advanced settings I was talking about earlier on the controller. So if you're going to use, you know, 10 actions per minute, that's the default. It's very, very safe, very conservative. Whether it's Hyper-V, Zen Server, ESX, it doesn't matter. But if you wanted to get aggressive, 15 is what I did. And it does have an impact on the host processor. Here's a PowerShell command that you can execute. And you can go through and run this PowerShell command on a particular set of VMs. And what this will do will actually disable that bin file state. The reason why you have to do it through PowerShell is because the VMM templates by default, and particularly in Service Pack 1, do not have an option for you to disable memory running state. unfortunately. So by running this PowerShell script, you just put in the list of names of all the VMs, and you will actually automatically change the bin file state to zero. It will still create a bin file, but the size will always be zero. It will never grow past zero. So this is really, really important as you're looking at leveraging storage space. Now let's see if I can do that real quick. All right, so let's see, we're on my host, and again, I'm sorry for the small resolution, but I have some VMs here. Let's take a look. We have Win8 VMs, we have some Win7 VMs. So right now, the Win8 VM is something I just recently created, so I don't believe I modified that. So if I go to my VMM server here, and I'll do this and minimize this real quick, I have that PowerShell window open right here. So by simply executing this PowerShell command, it's going to ask me to enter a prefix I want to search on. I put in particular VM names that I see inside VMM, not the NetBIOS names. And it will go through, find all those VMs. And again, they have to be in the off state because you can't change the properties of the VM while it's on for this particular function. And then it will automatically go through and change that setting so that it goes from safe state to power off. One single script can change all of that for all your storage for all those VMs on the fly. This is some other auto-tuning stuff. When we go through the provisioning services wizard, there is a default of creating 10 VMs when we're using the write cache auto add. That's pretty safe. Like I mentioned, it's not something you want to mess with a lot. But for whatever reason, if you feel the need that it's not fast enough, you can modify this setting on the PBS console for the user you're logged into, and it will change the default interval to be 10 to 15, whatever you think it is. So this is an advanced tweak. It's not something that we recommend you do for production. If you want to test it, fine. But it is something that is available. Disabling the Windows 8 first high login. This is something that gets kind of annoying in VDI. So it's great for a tablet and great for a user logging in front of you. But for VDI, you don't need it. I don't know someone to tell me hi when I log in. I already know who I am. So by simply running this registry value on your master image in private mode or your machine creation server image and applying your updates, you'll disable this for new users that log in. So when they log in, they automatically load their profile, and you don't see this window, this message, as you would normally when you log into a machine for the first time under Windows 8. So this actually will save time logging in and speed up the login process. This is something that's really cool. This is an internal project that, by show of hands, how many of you guys are big into VMM or use VMM for any sort of management or automation? One of the things that we always found out in Zen Desktop 7 in terms of working with the labs team is we know we've made it easier to install just by going through next, and installing Zen Desktop 7. I think it's like 10 clicks, give or take, and then about 12 to 13 minutes to install it. What we want to find out is how can we make it easier to install so that it's automated. So you don't have to do a whole heck of a lot of work other than find the ISO and then have a couple VMs. The methodology behind this is called the Easy Button. And what we're using is kind of a prototype that's an internal project. It's not quite out yet. If you're into any automation in terms of VMM or Hyper-V PowerShell scripting, there's a guy named Brian Ehlert at Citrix. He runs a website called IT Proctology. So it's itproctology.blogspot, I think it's .com or wherever it is, looking at IT from the inside out. So if you're big into PowerShell scripts, big into Hyper-V scripts, big into VMM scripts, please go check out his site. He posts his stuff at least weekly. And they're really, really useful stuff that you can take and use every day in your environment. So I'll show you a little video of this and what this looks like. But what we're leveraging here are going to be VMM templates. So I'll kind of narrate and walk you through what this is going to look like. So let's give me a little bit of hiccup while this picks up here. So you can see here what we're going to do is leverage a particular service we've created. We have something called a Zen Desktop POC. And what we're going to do is go ahead and give this a name. And effectively, this is what we're going to build Zen Desktop automatically in a small sort of proof of concept fashion. Maybe look further down the line, you could use this for production. But what we have are these things called templates or service templates. And basically what we've done is we have these sysprep VMs, and we have the Zen Desktop ISO. And the requirements are basically provide me your domain credentials, admin, password, username. And these are the normal set of information that you would use as you go through the process of installing Zen Desktop. But we're just automating it for you in terms of using a service template. Now, we're going to put in some other information, you know, as you create Zen Desktop, once you're past installation, like your name, your controller, your site name, storefront server. All these things are options you would do after you've created or after you've installed Zen Desktop. So post-installation configuration. So now the service template's going to go through. It's going to go ahead and do its communication check, make sure it's got all the necessary things, whether it's templates, ISOs, and so forth. And then we go through the process of deploying the service. Now, this whole video is about, you know, 5 to 6 minutes long, so some parts are a little kind of boring, but it gives you an idea of what the automation process looks like. So as it's going through the job's going to execute, go through VMM, go and look at the service template. It's going to go and find whatever VHDs it may have to build a Zen Desktop controller, to build Storefront. It's going to find all those VMs, mount the particular Zen Desktop ISO for version 7 that's needed, and build out the infrastructure for you. So your amount of clicks using a service template was really, really, really minimal. So all that process we went through by just a few simple clicks right straight from System Center Virtual Machine Manager. So this process here, it may take, you know, a couple minutes, give or take. But the very end result is once you have this built, you have the VMs there that you can log into that are done. The operating system's there. The Zen Desktop installation's there. It's even configured, and it's ready to go. So from a service provider standpoint, from an enterprise standpoint, this sort of automation saves a massive amount of time, and it's extremely powerful. So we'll wait just a second so you can see what the final output looks like, but let's see if I can fast forward it just a little bit. Yep, and it looks like it's almost done. Any questions on this so far? Do you guys think, by show of hands, if you're into this, would this be helpful for you to automate Zen Desktop 7 to make the installation faster? Pretty cool. Very good. Very good. So we'll give it just another minute. Any questions, just in general, in terms of stuff you've heard so far, last-minute things, hey, I'm curious about this in terms of version 7 with PVS. Any questions by show of hands? No? Okay, cool. Not too bad. So it's almost done. You see, he's just going to go to the very left side here, look at the jobs, and just about every VM here is created. And there we go. So I think at this point, we'll just go to the VM services, and he'll open up a particular console window, and then you'll see the whole connection to that particular VM here. So I think this whole process took about maybe 7-8 minutes to do. And again, these VMs were empty. They were just sysprep-based machines that we started with. And you didn't have to actually do a whole heck of a lot of work other than put in some credentials and post-configuration stuff you want to use in terms of creating the farm, what you want to call it, credentials, and so forth. And so we'll wait for that screen to refresh here. So he'll pull up this one. And this is the, let's see, he's on, I forget which one this is. Yeah, this is the whole controller. So there's Studio. So version 7 was installed. Normally, if you launch this console right now, it would go through the process of asking you to configure it. But once a console opens up, it's done. He already appended that information at the very beginning when he went through using the service templates. So as you can see, it's already pre-configured. So pretty much soup to nuts in about less than 10 minutes to have everything created. Okay, and let's go back. All right, if you're interested in anything Cisco, anything Dell, we do have a site where you actually can find more information out on Citrix.com in terms of what we're doing with the rest of our alliance partners. You're interested in doing things with NetApp, you're interested in doing things with IBM. We have a lot of that data coming out for version 7. If you're looking for stuff on vSphere, I'm working on that also with HP. So if you have interest in using vSphere for Zen Desktop 7, that's definitely something you can ping me on afterwards. So we're almost at the point where we're going to give something away in terms of giveaway, in terms of takeaways, I should say. Obviously, like I mentioned before, we support Server 2012, Windows 8, just about everything you can think of that's new. If you're looking at doing what's super, super new, and that's Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2, I would hold off Again, we just finished releasing code. We're working very hard to get something out as soon as possible. So I wouldn't attempt to go ahead and put that right into a test because I'm thinking it may not work. The current stuff does work. 8 and 2012 alone do work. So if you're looking at completely being cutting edge, I would hold off a little bit on that one before, so we officially know we have some code out. In terms of edocs, we have the edocs link that's already out for version 7. Everything you need to know, technical ins and outs, is available. Step-by-step how-to. And so with that, let's give something away. Normally what I would do is I would do a really fun game, but I'm going to save you guys the embarrassment. I play something called Rock, Paper, Scissors, Spock, Lizard, or Lizard, Spock, if you've ever followed Big Bang Theory show. But I'll make it real easy on you guys. One question, real simple. First person to raise their hand, I'll throw this to you, and you get to have it. In what year was Citrix founded? Guy in the back, you win. All right, and that's all I have. If you have any questions, come on up. In terms of feature chart, this is an eye chart. As I mentioned, you can tell it is an eye chart. And if someone says, hey, you know what, I really need to see that PowerPoint. I've got a C-level exec that wants to know, why do I need to do Zen Desktop 7? What's all the benefits, whether it's FlexCast, whether it's user experience? This truly is an eye chart. Please don't read it. It's just something you can take in terms of downloading the PowerPoint offline and giving to an exec that really wants to know all the benefits. From policies to UX to adoption to application delivery to everything. It's all listed right there. In terms of other related content, I have another session tomorrow. This is going to be more focused on app delivery, whereas today was more focused on desktop delivery. And if you have any more in-depth questions, I'll be at the Ask the Experts table tonight. Thanks for attending, and please fill out your evaluation.